when they Minister, the department will be coming to present the annual report. Yeah, it's very tight. We're supposed to have tabled our BRR report by that Friday, the 19th. So I think, members, as we go through today, we just need some guidance as to practically how we're going to manage the time next week. Because usually what would have happened in all the years before, in this week we have the AG, CG department, our briefing. We prepare BRR draft report based on your observations and recommendations. We send it to members. You have a read-through. We have our first meeting to look at the draft report. You give input. We then incorporate the input. And then on our second meeting, which is usually the following day, you then adopt the report based on any amendments and changes you had agreed to. So we literally have between next Wednesday and Thursday in order for us to ATC on the Friday. So it's very tight.
Chair, I'd like to recommend that the majority of our recommendations are going to be a copy and paste of last year and the year before and the year before and the year before, particularly as it relates to the Department of Women. So perhaps what we can do is do the copy and paste for the Department of Women, do what we need to do for the CGE based on our meeting yesterday. So that will be a draft of a draft that will not be for circulation. And then once we have had our meeting with the Department of Women on Wednesday, we amend. So that we've already got a template document that we can circulate amongst us now. And then on Wednesday, we can perhaps meet after we've met with the Department of Women and we just say, right, we're going to amend this, we're going to amend this. I doubt there will be any amendments. I doubt it. But that will at least, give the our support team enough time to ATC it by that Friday. So that is just a recommendation. And then perhaps after that meeting with the Department of Women, Chair, I feel quite strongly that we are going to have to include in the BRRR some kind of sanction as a recommendation to Parliament. Whether it is that Treasury must do X or this must, or the Minister must investigate Y or so-and-so must do Z, whatever it is, that we must take a decision and that should be tabled in Parliament so that Parliament is aware about the challenges that we are having. I so recommend.
Thank you. So just for us to be clear. So the recommendation is that we provide a template in the meantime, a rough draft, so that members can have a look at it, for you to provide input. After our meeting Wednesday with the department, based on that meeting, you will then give additional recommendations and amendments, if any, so that Thursday we have another lunchtime meeting just for adoption in a VRR. Just in terms of our time frame, can Monday be a doable day in which you get a draft of the draft?
Why not Tuesday?
Okay, Tuesday, a day before that. Yeah, it just gives us more time to consolidate.
Because just remember that we've already received the annual report from the Department of Women, and the AG has presented to us. And so we've got the annual report, we've got the AG's report. All we're going to do with these people is questioning them on the information we already know. So we already know that they are repeat offenders. So it's literally just an opportunity to give them right of reply. But
thank you, members. So what we'll do now is Crystal will go through the annual report in terms of program performance and the financials. I will then look at all the implications for BRR. I've also looked at the key deliverables, which is that four draft policies. I'm only going to briefly comment on it, but I've also picked up some other issues from over the years, which I think needs attention. So I'm going to hand over to Crystal now for us to start with her document. Thank you.
Thank you, Kashyapa. Morning, Chair Members. So my document is this one. This is annual report of the department. We can skip the first five pages. That is just providing the overview in terms of the mandate, the strategic objectives, and the SONA implications for 2017-18. If we go to page 6, starting there with the budget. So that table there just reminds us what the allocation for the department was at the beginning of the financial year. So overall, in 2016-17, they had received a budget of 196.9 million. That's including the CGE's transfer payment. And in 2017-18, that had increased to 206.1 million. So if we take the CGE's transfer payment away from that money, the department had an operating budget of 127 million for the 2017-18 financial year. So that's the figure we should be working with, 127.8 million. They had indicated at the beginning of the financial year that they had allocated 52.1 million for goods and services and 71.9 million rand for compensation of employees. They projected that in terms of their spending under goods and services, their main cost drivers would be travel and subsistence at 16.2 million, property payments at 15.8 million, and then expenditure for external audit costs at 3.5 million rand. I'll get to another little table later on where we can see what the main cost drivers actually were at the end of the financial year as what they projected at the beginning of the financial year. We turn over the page on page 7. That's just a diagram showing the allocation per program. Again, as always, administration gets most of the money. Program 2 actually has the smallest budget, with 16.6 million for the financial year, and program 3 had gotten 28.2 million rand. If we turn to page 8, so that table there, table 3, gives us a breakdown of the actual expenditure for the program. That should be 31 March 2018. My apologies on the top there, not 2017. So the administration program, at the beginning of the year, they said to us they are, as they allocate 83 million rand to that program. The final appropriation then, as at the end of the financial year, they indicate was 83.3 million. The actual expenditure was 82.5 million, which left them with 773,000 rand. They say they underspent in that program due to funding that would have been used to write off irrecoverable debts. And because the department was still in the process of approving a debt management policy, that didn't happen, so they didn't use that money. And also there was delayed acquisitions relating to upgrading and procurement of software licenses. That's why they had the money there. In terms of program two, I've put both totals there. You'll see in the one table it says 94.9 in the one column, and then next to that 16.6. So let's focus on the 16.6 million because that's the operational budget for that program, excluding the CGE's money. So the appropriation was then 15.9 million, and their actual expenditure was 15.949, which basically means they spent all the money in that program. There's only a 3,000 rand variance there. In program three, they had appropriated 28.2 million. The final appropriation was 28.6, and they'd actually spent 27.9 million, leaving a surplus of 680,000 rand there. And they say the reason for that was that they had funds earmarked for replacement and procurement of computer equipment for existing and newly recruited officials, which they didn't use. So there's no over-expenditure. They have a surplus of 1.4 million rand. Even in the program, there hasn't been any overspending. However, if we turn over the page 9, there's been a lot of shifting of money between programs. So although there's no over-expenditure reflected, there's been variance between different programs to offset the expenditure in the other programs. So, for example, like I've indicated there, they've made variance between programs to offset expenditure on compensation of employees, payment for goods and services, and payments for capital assets and transfers and subsidies. Just as an example, a 6.3 million environment was made from program 2 to programs 1 and 3 for goods and services, compensation of employees, and transfers and subsidies. So, as I said, there's no looking at the programs, nothing was overspent, but within those programs, money's been shifted around to cover where there's been costs that incurred that were higher than appropriated. Then also the department indicates that they have allocated $4 million for consultants. However, when we look at the appropriation statement in the annual report, that is recorded as 5.3 million rand that they've spent on consultants. However, in the annual report, they provide a table on page 97 and 98, which is called a report on consultant appointments using appropriated funds for the period 1 April to 31 March. So that gives us a breakdown of what the project was, how many consultants were used, the duration of the project, and also what the money was that was spent there. The total there in that table comes to 6.3 million rand, which is different to the amount in the appropriation statement, which is at 5.3 million rand. So we just need some clarity. I tried to find that missing money, but I don't, it's not what's in the appropriation statement. If I add those amounts up, I get out. If I just look at consultants in the different programs, it comes to 5.3 million. But this table indicates 6.3 million. There's a million that I don't, that needs to be clarified. I was saying to Kashiva, it could be, you know, like with the CGE sometimes, it's sort of donor or sponsored, so they're still reflected. The money there, but that's not coming across clearly in the table, so that needs to be clarified. That could be the case. The other thing is that out of the 26 projects that they use consultants on, but They could only provide details regarding the total number of consultants for 9 of those projects. So if members go to that table on page 98 in the annual report. You can see there on the table it says project title, total number of consultants that worked on the project, estimated duration, and contract value. You can see that most of the numbers for the total number of consultants are blank. They've only provided details for 9 projects in terms of the number of consultants, and in terms of the estimated duration, they've only provided the information for 16 projects, and 3 of them are stated as ongoing and 2 as intermittent out of those 16. At the bottom of the table there, they say total number of individual consultants indeterminable, estimated duration indeterminable. So that for me, if you're spending this money, you need to know who you paid and how many people work on a project for how long. It can't be intermittent, it can't be no information, it can't be... So that's the one thing. Then the other thing I just wanted to highlight that I didn't include in there is that when we do then look at the cost drivers overall for the financial year. So, compensation of employees, 72.5 million. That's one side. But in terms of goods and services, the highest cost drivers there were travel and subsistence at 13 million rand, property payments at 11.5 million, and then the spending on consultants, which was 5.3 million. If members just remember what I said earlier, at the beginning of the year, they said that their key cost drivers would be under goods and services, talent assistance, property payments, and external audit fees. The consultants have turned out to be higher than the external audit fees at the end of the financial year. On page 9. Top of page 9. Okay. I'll do another one page just outlining this because I haven't included this paragraph in there. I just wrote it down now, but I'll send that to you. If we look at the financial statements, so also looking at what we heard yesterday, the AG was talking about the irregular expenditure and the surplus and wasteful expenditure. So the irregular expenditure, we've heard yesterday that it amounted to 6.1 million, and that was primarily as a result of the non-compliance with the SEM practices. And then the surplus and wasteful expenditure also amounting to 114,000 rand. I don't think I need to go through the AG's findings again since we had the presentation on that yesterday. If we then just turn over to page 11.5, overview and assessment of program performance. There's a little table there, or diagram rather. So overall, the department had set 27 targets for this financial year. Mm-hmm. They achieved 16 out of the 27, which is a success rate of 59.2%. And the total budget spent is 99.3%. So they basically spent all their money and achieved less than about less than two-thirds of the target. If you look per program, the program that has the highest success rate is program 3, where they had set 8 targets and met 6. Program 2, they set 6, they only met 3, but they spent 100% of that budget. Program 1, they set 13 targets and only achieved 7, and the success rate is 54%, and they spent 100% of that by 99.1% budget as well. Yesterday, the audit committee also indicated that the department had improved in terms of their performance year on year, because in the previous financial year, they had a success rate of 36.8%, and this year it's 59.2%. However, this year they've got 11 fewer targets than they did in the previous year.
And how do you
So we're not comparing the same thing. You can't say we had 27 targets last year and we only managed 39%. And we have 27 this year and we now have 59%. It's a case that last year we had more targets and you had achieved 39% of them. This year we have less targets, but you still only achieve 59%. It's not really a fair comparison between the 2 years because the number of targets have decreased. If we turn over the page on page 12, that's just an indication then of last year's performance and expenditure. There, like I indicated, that 38 targets last year compared to 27 this year. On the next few tables, I've just put down what those unmet targets were, but though a lot of those were also covered yesterday, especially on the administration program in terms of the audit findings around the invoices not paid within 30 days, not implementing all the audit action plans, and those things. In terms of program 2, it's around the policy framework for provision of sanitary dignity to indigent girls and women developed and initiated. It's the whole thing around where that target was restated, going now from a framework instead of a policy. They also yesterday was indicated that around the 9-point plan, they hadn't done work on each of those components. They only focus on women's access to credit, land, and property. And they are saying that they will continue with the progress, with analysis progress in the current, in this 2018-19 financial year. And then the draft report, with the cabinet consideration of the report on the outcome of the national dialogue, the draft report was developed but not tabled as planned, is what they're indicating. And they're saying that the draft cabinet memo on consideration of the report on the outcome of the dialogue is to be developed and tabled to cabinet by the end of April 2018. So we'll have to hear whether that has indeed happened. Around program 3, there were only 2 targets not met. So it's around the 4 country reports for international multilateral forums. They indicated that 3 reports were not completed due to a lack of input by national departments to enable the department to consolidate their inputs, and also the 4 quarterly monitoring reports on progress against the 9-point plan and outcome 14. They didn't meet that target. They only produced 3 reports, and they're saying the information received was not sufficient for the department to reproduce quality standards reports, and they'll implement measures to ensure that the national monitoring and evaluation system is more gender responsive and includes gender indicators. So I think also just there, we need to find out whether these targets, the unmet ones, have been included in the 2018 financial year, what the progress around that is, and what the financial implications around that is. On page 14, human resources. So the department had 107 approved posts as at the end of 31st March 2018. Of which 101 were filled, resulting in a vacancy rate of 5.6%. Just looking at the personnel breakdown and salary costs, so in the administration, they had 70 approved posts, of which 66 were filled, and the expenditure there is 42.3 million. In the Social Transformation and Economic Empowerment Program, all the posts there are full, 15, amounting to 7.8 million. Program 3, Policy, Stakeholder Coordination and Knowledge Management, approved posts are 22, 20 posts are filled, amounting to 13.4 million, and overall, it's just looking at salaries alone, it's 63.5 million rand. Key human resource information, the majority of personnel in the department are in the administration program, so 70 out of the 101 are in the administration program. Out of that, 47 employees are in senior management. They added 4 posts to this establishment, which includes interns and temporary contract workers. They had a turnover rate of 9%, and in terms of people leaving the department during the financial year, 10 people had left. 4 resigned, 1 was dismissed, 1 retired, and 3 were transferred to other public service departments, and one contract had expired. They also indicate that four staff members were on precautionary suspension. So they indicate in the annual report that there were no performance awards presented during the 2017-18 financial year. However, on page 151, there's an amount of 44,000 rand reflected against performance awards. So they just need to clarify that, because I don't know. Page 151 of the annual report. There's about 47 staff members who get paid just under million rand.
What? And they do nothing. And achieve nothing.
Yeah. And there's about
half a million.
Yeah. then there are two employees that are receiving salaries that are higher than the level determined by a job evaluation. So the jobs are at level 11 and they're being paid at level 12, and the department says that this is a measure, as a measure to retain or attract their services. So there are two people that are getting paid higher. We don't know.
I'm going to ask another question.
Because my daughter is actually management.
Don't know. So then we looked at, like I indicated, there's no performance awards, but just looking, let me just find that one page that is the document. I'm just going to find it on my page 15 of the document. So no performance awards, they indicate, however, there's that 44,000 rand there that we don't know who we're doing. And I'm saying they indicated that no performance awards were paid, but there's that 44,000 rand that's here that we need to clarify where that went to. Yeah. So on page 84 and page 85, you'll see there 3.5.4, that table there, promotions by physical occupation, and 3.5.5, promotions by salary band. So they indicated that a total of 62 employees received notch progression within their salary level for the financial year. Notch progression. So that means within your salary band, you moved up, you got an increase in your salary based on the notches within each salary band. So 62 people received notch progression. At salary level 3 to 5, there were 3 out of 10 employees. At salary level 6 to 8, there were 23 out of 32 employees. Salary level 9 to 12, there were 19 out of 24 employees. And at senior management, 17 out of 30 in the senior management received a notch progression.
I think just to pause on that, I mean, we looked at this yesterday because I was trying to work out in my head. So often members would look at, are we paying performance bonuses? You read, oh, no performance bonuses. Brilliant. Remember, a performance bonus is a once-off. You get evaluated and they feel you've achieved your whatever you're supposed to. A promotion salary means it's not just a once-off, I'm going to give you 10,000 rand. It's moving your money from earning 860,000 to hypothetically earning 920,000. It means you for a whole year you're getting more money. So what we are seeing is they bypass performance bonus, but 62 officials were given salary promotion. So, and
that's 62 out of 107.
Yeah. So 62 out of 99.
Out of 99, because at the beginning of a financial year, where that was 62 out of
99. So if we just look at some of the challenges Parliament had, so all the support staff here in Parliament, for the past 3 years, we didn't get a performance bonus, we didn't get a notch increase, which means all of that is stagnant. So we've just had the year-on-year annual increase. For this department, they didn't give them performance bonus, but they did give them a notch increase. And a notch increase, if you look at what GPSA says, can only happen if you score out of 5. You must have performed over 4 for 2 consecutive years. So in other words, me as an employee, I must have said within my job description, I met and exceeded my targets, so therefore I got 4 out of 5. For 16, 17, and because I got a 4 out of 5 in 17, 18, I am now entitled to a notch increase. Because a notch increase would happen when you have 2 good performances for 2 consecutive years. In Parliament, irrespective of whether you had good performance for 2 consecutive years, none of us received not in case of regular performance bonus. So I think that's why we raised this. So don't be sidelined by thinking they didn't get the performance bonus, so it's fine. The money actually went to paying a significant amount of high-end officials. Because if you look at the salary level 3 to 5, that's your clocks and maybe security, but it's actually the people in management and I up that went at a promotion in the salary band.
So they're basically using all the money that they've got now to reward themselves. So again, what have they got to show for what they do? And the thing is also, we must ask them on the basis of what. If they give 62 out of 99 people that it's a notch increase.
We must ask
the minister, then of these 62 people, we want them to be furnished with what are the targets that were set for them and that they met and overexceeded in order for them to be able to be qualified. Because the thing is, I think if you have to push her on that, she won't be able to tell you what these people did for this notch increase. Because, I mean, you can't, it doesn't gel. If you look at the targets made in terms of the department, and you must juxtapose that with what people did, there will be nothing that they can say that people did in order to justify those.
And another thing, remember yesterday during that report, the issue was about incapacity, understaffing, etc. So the internal audit committee says, no shame, these people don't know what the hell they're doing, they don't know where they are, they don't know who they are, and yet they're still getting notch increases. It's theft. It is theft. They are liars, thieves, and cheats. And they are cheating women, the most vulnerable people of our country. And gender inequality has increased. Sihlalo, I move that we disband the Department of Women and this committee becomes the new department. I so move.
Future plans, page 15.
I'm going to go to the recording.
to your manager.
So she's asking that we use our mic.
I'm sorry, just for the purposes of the recording, otherwise it wouldn't.
You see, this is more informal shouting.
Yeah.
I don't want this informal shouting. Yeah.
No, I don't want to quote anyone incorrectly, so it's recorded.
You can quote the line.
I need clarity here. Yeah? I'm really in a desert. Sudan. I'm in the middle of the Sudan. Let's look back. When we were trying to get clarity around quite a few areas from Minister Susan Shabamba, and she would say they are still looking for certain people with different skills. That's where we start. And that never happened. So we also contributory because we didn't pressurize them, I think, enough. Or I'm being selfish when I talk like that. But the thing is, we're posing questions to her and we're not getting any satisfactory responses. No, we're still looking for skilled people, blah, 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 but the money was going. And we are in a mess now.
And the thing is, I'm sorry to tell you, but I don't know. I said nothing.
You are on the record.
I don't mind being quoted. No, all I said, I said on a committee where our now minister was the then minister. So I'm just saying we must maybe pray as well as nothing, I'm not saying.
She's talking, but she's not saying anything.
I'm speaking in code.
In code,
like
yes.
A politician, yeah.
We never, ever got an answer for all the questions we posed. And then there was Schreiner. And if you remember, I kept on saying, why did they bring it? Maybe because of the book, the information I have. You know, I wasn't seeing her for the first time. Actually, we've been undermined. We've really been undermined. And I feel sorry for you young ladies. Because at the end, we're part of the package. And yet we wanted information which was never coming through. And but I'm prepared to stand and say none of the people we have here contributed to all this. We pose so many questions. But we're too dumb. And I remember the tantrums. If you pressurize tantrums. Now we're sitting us. Then she was the goat. to answer. Whoever is responsible for the mess must answer, and not the committee. But I'm open to correction. I'm human, I can err.
I'm just looking at our time. Can Crystal finish? Then I will look at achievements, and then we can. Because I think, there's a lot more. So Crystal will finish up hers. I'll move into mine, and then I think there's a lot more discussion that still needs to happen after we've done both.
Just the last point there, the future plans. So in the annual report, the department lists, at the beginning of the report, a whole host of things that they will undertake and products that they'll develop in the future. No, they it's just a list of things that they're saying they want to achieve in the future, yes. However, some of them have been part of our previous APPs. There are a number of items, for example, the review of the National Gender Policy Framework. I think members will remember, I think for the past 3 years, that has been an item which they were saying that they're going to look at. And there was also an indication that they wanted to position the department as a gender knowledge hub. I think this was 2 years ago that was in an APP. So this, again, forms part of the future plan. So while some of the things in those things are commendable and things that we need, given the performance, given the budget allocation, I don't know whether that's feasible and whether they will indeed be able to undertake and achieve those activities. Just overall, the concluding comments there is, as I indicated, they're saying that their performance has increased from the previous year, but there was fewer targets. However, the money has all been spent. They need to give us progress regarding all outstanding reports. Progress on outstanding targets must be reported, as well as the impact on financial and human resources in the 2018-19 financial year. And the measures to deal with non-compliance should be strengthened and monitored regularly. I think this is something that came up strongly yesterday, both from the AG and from the audit committee. So I think given what we've heard yesterday and what's contained in the annual report, a lot needs to be done. Thank you, Crystal. We now move on to my document. It says briefing document, BRR 2018, key issues for consideration for Department of Women in the Presidency. So just to, as you prepare for next week, Wednesday, members, you would have your annual report, you would have the briefing by the AG and the audit committee. We had also asked of the department to submit the Register of Irregular Expenditure. So in other words,
what the Auditor General had indicated to us, help members along by asking the Department for a register to detail what's your irregular expenditure about. So we're still waiting for that. And also, based on the key deliverable, we had asked the department, please send us your reports. So in November of last year, they sent us the draft salary dignity framework, the financial inclusion framework, the business case for gender responsive budgeting planning, and then that's the NE framework. I've had a look at it, and I'll only briefly comment on it. But I think, technically, in order for you to assess the performance of the department, you need something tangible to say, this was their products for 17-18, and this was our evaluation of what we thought they had done based on your based on the products they give you. Bearing in mind, their products is reports, it's things in writing that they give to us. Over and above us going to a Women's Day event or looking at the national dialogue we're invited. So as we look at the macro picture around the department, on the first page, like I did last year, we've had annual reports and APP since the inception of the department. From 2016, we had a revised APP and a revised strategic plan. So what would happen in that financial year, they table an APP, but in a few months later, they give us a revised APP and a SAT plan. Between 16 and 17, there was another revised APP. Between 17 and 18 and 18-19, there was a revised APP for 17-18 and again a revised APP for 18-19. So, and even though whether it's called an erratum or an amendment, there were changes to targets. So this just gives you a snapshot. We're going to the end of that MTSF cycle. We're supposed to be looking at the strategic plan overall and say, what has your department contributed to achieving their overall targets and objectives? But we've also seen how things change, and with that changes in leadership. If we move over to page 2, I've just detailed for members in that table, you now know for every year, per month, exactly when something was tabled and when a revised erratum for an APP or strategic plan was introduced. And I think it's important for members to know this historically so that you begin to see it, because often I think we lose track of, so when did we revise, and it's consistent. And I've taken all this information based on what has occurred in ATCs. As we move to page 3, the questions yesterday to the AG and the Audit Committee was, but didn't we have a turnaround strategy? Didn't we have a restructuring? Mm-hmm. We did. We did back in the inception, and 2 years after that, we even had a skills audit to look at who's there, are they placed in the appropriate place, and what needs to change. And the reassurance to the committee 3 years ago, at the end of that restructuring, was we're on the right path now. We've restructured, and that was the time of the former DG, where it was about placement of appropriate officials in a particular program. But despite that restructuring, I think the audit committee member told us, how is it that we're still struggling with trying to see whether the APP matches the strategic plan and whether we're meeting targets and whether we're on the right strategy even, do we giving effect to our mandate. In terms of the overview of targets achieved, so Crystal's looked at what wasn't met. I've looked at, okay, let's be fair to the department. Let's look and see what is it that they have met over the past couple of years. So if we just look at program 1, in 13-14 we started off with 13 targets and we achieved 10. By 17-18 we achieved 7 out of 13 targets. If we move over to page 4, for program 2 We started off with 10 targets. By 17-18, we were down to 6 targets, of which we only achieved half. For program 3, which moves on to page 5, we started, and that changed because initially it was children, and then we moved to research policy and coordination. It started off with 1 target and moved to 8, and we had 6. But like Crystal mentioned, if you look between 16 and 17, in 16-17, program 3 had 13 targets, whereas in 17-18 had 8. So it was actually having to work on less targets. And bearing in mind that also the amount of programs had decreased from, having 4, it went right down to 3, and the administration program always stayed the same. So if you look at overall achievements, just like Crystal mentioned, and just to reiterate, in 16-17 we had 38 targets. In 17-18 we have 27. Technically, we only achieved 2 more targets in 17-18. Because in 16-17 we achieved 14 targets, and in 17-18 we achieved 16. So, in the previous financial year, and this year we've got 27. So, even if you look at the percentages, you think, oh, 39% last year, but 59% this year is really good. But when you look at the actual numbers, technically, it's only 2 more targets that they had to do this year. And yet they had less overall. At the end of page 5, so for officials within each program had fewer targets that they had to reach towards achieving. So despite the capacity constraints, vacancies in the administration and core programs, many of the key deliverables which the department cited as achievements was actually outsourced and done by consultants, like Crystal has mentioned, on that HR table. Yeah, so, and I'll discuss this a bit further on page 12. So even though the department stipulates that no performance rewards were issued, like that was, as she mentioned, on page 90, 62 still received a promotion in a salary band notch increase, and a performance reward is reflected in addition to a service-based award, but none of that is explained. So what I'm telling members is, if you just look at your achievements, we achieved 16 targets. Mm. Out of those 16 targets, nobody got a performance bonus, but people got salary band promotion increases. And even though they got salary band promotion increases, much of the work for the targets that they achieved was actually done by consultants. Mm. So if you look at what is your value and what did your department spend on as an achievement? So they spent money, they gave these people more salaries, but the work was actually, majority of the work was done by consultants. Okay. Yeah. So as we move over to page 6, again, if you just look at the strategic priorities for 2015-20, it's to ask you, well, when you look at those deliverables out of 27, how did it take the department closer to achieving their vision and mission? How did they realize socioeconomic empowerment of women when they only met 9 targets in the core program, of which 3 products are still draft? So in other words, when I spoke to those deliverables that they did, the papers that they were supposed to give us, 3 of it is draft. Mm. Draft sanity, dignity, draft gender responsive budgeting, draft financial inclusion. I'm purely focusing on achievement, what we spent and what we regarded as significant. Just at the end of page 6, I want to highlight some of the, we've mentioned this before, there was this report on the status of women in the South African economy. It was launched on Women's Day. The president, former president, had indicated it's something the country needs to do. It was actually done by the presidency, but in partnership with the department. And we were supposed to look at the follow-up and recommendations. That has gone completely quiet. It's not mentioned at all in 17, 18. They don't report on it, nothing. And that was, money was spent for consultants by the presidency to look at that. It was a stock take of where the country's at in terms of women in the country. And they were very clear as to which departments needed to do what. And that's applied nicely with the 9-point plan. But that's gone quiet. And why is that? If we move on to page 7, in terms of gender monitoring framework for evaluating women's progress, this is a very important priority. But the department actually submitted a report, Monitoring and Evaluation Framework for the Socioeconomic Empowerment of Women and Gender Equality, which the department now indicates is intended for internal use. Now, what does that mean? Initially, with the inception of this department, the mandate was we need to evaluate how other government departments are doing. But you can only do that if you have some sort of idea of how you're going to do that. And they needed to develop a framework. In the previous department, some of our members know that there was an initial framework developed to help assess how government was doing. I've had a look at that document. First, it was done by consultants, and it wasn't going to look, the consultants wasn't developing a framework to help the department to evaluate other government departments. No, it was to look at what's going on inside the department. So in other words, what do they need to do to be able to develop a framework? Monitoring and Evaluation Framework for the Socioeconomic Empowerment of Women and Gender Equality. So I'll read the purpose. The framework will be used to identify the annual targets to be tracked and assessed, identify intended beneficiaries of the relevant interventions within the department, summarize the strategic goal and program objectives in evaluable terms, finalize an M&E system inside the department. Right? So in other words, it's not about let's look at how we're going to evaluate social development to see whether they're delivering on women or water and sanitation or small business development. No, it's looking at what our people inside the department must do, can do, are able to do. So these consultants then looked at the two programs, program 2 and 3, to see, do people understand, can they do it, are they able to? This is the report that was submitted to us. What they did was they looked at the core skills, the capacity in the M&E unit. I'm just going to read some of the observations. They did questionnaires and they did interviews with staff. None of the current employees have an in-depth technical knowledge and skills on planning, implementation, and management of M&E. None of the employees have a professional qualification in M&E, which is a prerequisite to manage the M&E function. Employees cannot be considered as an M&E practitioner due to inadequate technical expertise in M&E practice. The current level of technical expertise poses a challenge in the ability of the unit to implement and sustain an M&E system. One of the employees that completed a credit-bearing short course in aligning, planning, budgeting, implementation, M&E at a post-school in education institution. So in other words, when these consultants came in, they were supposed to help the two programs to say, well, what do you need to do to set up the M&E framework? But they needed to stock that to see who do we have. And from what the report shows, it's very worrying because on what basis were these people employed?
No, not only that, what have they been doing?
What have they been doing? But it ties in with what the Auditor General and the Audit Committee person acted yesterday in terms of the incapacity, lack of skills, and so forth. But saying that, I mean, Crystal and I looked at the staff. Ranji really has been around the department for many, many years, and she's in Program 3. She was employed at the time of Geraldine Fraser Molaketi in DPSA.
Mm-hmm.
And way, we're talking about probably 8, 10 years ago, just before the Zuma administration had come in. Back then, Ranji was part of the minister's team then to develop gender mainstreaming within DPSA. And the policy document was developed. And it was, back then, it was just about to go into implementation, but then we had a change of administration. And there's also Joyce Maluleke, who's also been around in the department for very long. So, to some extent...
It's in the annual report.
A picture of a...
But
what I'm saying is... But what I'm saying is, within the department, we can't say... within government, we can't say there are no people with experience. When somebody like Ranji really works with Geraldine Fraser Molaketi to look at gender mainstreaming 10 years ago.
And a report was done.
And the same with some of the, like, that Joyce was part of the previous department. So it's not to say we don't have institutional memory and skills. But I think this is very damning and it's very worrying. Because how are we moving forward when clearly the people within there don't have the requisite skills?
But also then when they did their skills order, did they not realize that they don't have people who can do the job? And you think, this was at the heart of the ineffectiveness of this department. Because we've always been asking them about where is this in the new framework, and to now be told by an external consultant that in fact the people sitting in that department don't even know, they don't know how to monitor and evaluate. And you see also for me, it baffles my mind, because for example, from the State of the Nation address, their commitments made to women. So surely any person with a basic qualification will know, then the next step you do is, if somebody is supposed to be doing X, Y, and Z for women, then naturally this department should be monitoring that department in terms of whether they're delivering on those promises. For example, President Zuma promised in, what was it? Which year was it?
2011.
Promised a sanitary pad. Now 2019. This department could have monitored that. That would have been a very easy thing to monitor.
7 years ago.
To say, there's this pledge from the president. Surely we should monitor whether other departments are implementing it. In terms of GBV, nobody ever helps the Department of Social Development to start from not doing one little thing.
Providing shelter.
So then, it's the blessing.
I just want to say one more thing, though. I know, Chair, I mean, you said that that maybe we haven't been harsh enough on this committee, but you will remember me coming to you and whispering in your ear and saying, please unleash the beast so that I could clap them. And remember in a particular meeting, I called them to their faces, liars, thieves, and cheats. And to their faces, I said, supply this committee with X, Y, Z. And I asked this Nelly, did they submit anything? And this Nelly said no. Before the budget speech, before this last budget speech, I said to this Nelly, I said, ask them these questions because they haven't asked them, and tell them they have a deadline until tomorrow, 5 o'clock or whatever. Otherwise, I'm going to have to name them and shame them in the speech. They told me she must wait. We will answer them when we want to answer. We are caught. And I said to them, you do not respect this committee. It's not that we haven't been harsh. We've criticized them.
Mm-hmm.
I've lashed them. But we haven't sanctioned them where it hurts. And that's the only way we're going to teach them a lesson is by money. They are there for money. God, they're not there for women. They don't care. They don't care about us as a portfolio committee. They will just come here, laugh at us, go back to work, earn their salary at the end of the month, come back to us next week and have and report again. We haven't done anything. Go back, earn a salary at the end of that month. The only way we are going to club these people is through a budget cut. We must club them in the pocket because that money is not going on women anyway, Sihlalowam. It's not going on women. That whole budget is being spent on salaries, travel, subsistence, consultants. Nothing. Nothing to do with women. Let's cut them. They're not going to learn a lesson. They will sit there in that position and keep that seat warm so long as they can and eat like parasites off the backs of women. I'm sitting up. Let's cut their budgets. Let's sanction them the only way that they understand the language of rands and cents. You know, really, what?
I can't pass a bill with a million salary. I want to see that. I mean,
I don't think we can cut a minister's salary.
No, I'm saying a budget, sorry.
Yeah. But you see that the other thing, Chairperson, is that I know that it's been mentioned in this committee that there has been a change in leadership. But remember, the Auditor General said that even in the last few months, there have been contraventions of legislation. So it's irrespective of the minister, irrespective of any changes, this department has and will continue to fail and fail and fail. They are leeches sucking the blood out of women in this country. What could they have done in the last 5 years? 5 years. And they've done nothing. Not one policy, not one report to this committee, not one reply. Nothing. From inception.
I think we must give a Kashiva to complete the presentation thereafter.
We're just going to hear more news. I'm going to need to be admitted into a mental institution because of the way how angry I'm feeling right now.
No, it's fine. Another will stand up. it's fine. I'm just saying that you must continue so that you can discuss more because.
So, just to wrap up then, in terms of strategic priorities, page 7, in terms of our campaigns and events, I think here again, we had asked in the brief, when we sent the briefing note to the department as to what they need to present to you next week, we want a detailed outline of, for every campaign, this is the cost, this is the amount of intended beneficiaries, and this was your, that was the outcome. Because we don't have that coming through in the annual report. So again, it's difficult for members to assess, if this is your strategic priorities for the past 5 years, how can we give an evaluation to say this has made a difference or not? So we're still awaiting that information. It was part of what the department is expected to present to members on the annual report. So we're still waiting for them to give us that extra detail. Next, if we move over to page 8, if we just pick up, just looking at what the minister said in her forward in the annual report, one of the things was around initiating policy, legislation, and performance indicators to measure progress by government departments so that they can look at the policy, budgets, and audits. But how did the minister envisage that we're going to do that when we don't even have an M&E framework? So again, it's to ask, well, in your forward, in your opening statement, you're saying, well, this is what this department was intended doing and did, but how did they do that when we don't have an M&E framework? They also move between national dialogues and sector-based dialogues. And I couldn't determine, well, what's the difference between that? That's on page 8. And then crucial for me is the departments maintain that this is not a service delivery implementing government department. Mm-hmm. But why then is the department fast-tracking the program of the distribution of salary dignity pads, mm-hmm. which is also in direct contrast to what was noted on page 24 of your annual report, which says the department is not mandated to deliver services directly to the public, but works in partnership with other government departments, civil society, and the private sector to promote the socioeconomic empowerment of women. So on page 24, I took out exactly that. It says there the department is not mandated to deliver on services.
Yeah. So we just move to page 24, right at the top, it says we're not mandated to deliver services. But in your minister's forward, it's saying we need to fast track the distribution of sanitary products.
So within one document, within the annual report, the minister's saying fast track the provision, but later on it's saying we don't do service delivery in terms of directly with the public.
It's going to be a problem because remember what the Auditor General yesterday said in terms of the irregular expenditure, mm-hmm. because some of those pads they couldn't track whether it's been delivered or not.
Yeah.
Right? So the one thing you were doing, you're not even doing right. You don't even know where they've gone. Somebody might have charged those pads because we don't know if it was delivered. So the Auditor General can't say.
And what pads are actually employed?
Yeah. But again, for me, in terms of my view around sanitary dignity, that it's one of a bigger component about sexual reproductive health for girls.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, about 2 months ago in the Multi-Party Women's Caucus, they had presented to the caucus on this project, the officials. And there were deputy ministers present within the meeting. And they challenged the officials to say, why is this is not the mandate of the Department of Women. It should actually be going to small business development. Because that's where the SMM is. So if anything, if we were to develop the framework, the provision and the promotion and the production should be with small business development and not Department of Women. We can say where the gaps and challenges are, but technically there is a department with a mandate to do that, and that's small business development. So, and if you think about the comment by the men from the Audit and Risk Committee, it comes back to what's your strategy, what's your mandate, what are you supposed to be doing, are you doing what you're supposed to be doing? Now if we look on to page 8 and 9 around what the accounting officer was saying in her forward, so she blames the reasons for non-delivery on chronic under-resourcing, under-capacitation, overburdened workforce, unsatisfactory organizational arrangement, scarce, yeah, the accounting officer, the acting DG. But we've had a turnaround strategy. Wasn't the turnaround strategy and the NMOS process supposed to address all of that?
And the restructuring.
So again, it brings into question, how can we be saying this? These are the issues for non-delivery. When we spent money and we put a process in place to look at restructuring.
If we move over to page 9, in terms of governance and finance matters, the accounting officer was saying that they were still busy with a debt management policy and a UIF policy.
What?
At the end of 17-18. Because there was a significant amount for UIF that was not paid. And that for me is bizarre, because how can you still be dealing with a debt management policy in the fourth year of your MTS cycle and a UIF policy? What was then in place for all the years before? Why we didn't deliver on particular things we were busy with the policy. Secondly, so even though the department indicated that they did not have unsolicited bid proposals concluded in the financial year under review, the AG said that one of the most common findings on supply chain management was that competitive bid was not invited. So the accounting officer in her forward is saying that they did not have any unsolicited bid proposals concluded in the financial year. So that's what the accounting officer is saying. If you look at what she writes in her section. But when you look at the AG's report, one of the key findings on supply chain management was that there was no competitive bidding, was not invited. So there's a contradiction. Your accounting officer saying, no, we didn't get any unsolicited bid proposals, but the AG is saying, actually, it didn't go to bid, so there's a disjuncture there. And similarly, despite the review of supply chain management policy in 2016-17, so in 2016-17, they looked at the supply chain management policy. It was revised and then it was approved in 2017-18 in order to strengthen compliance with the SCMP and prevent possible occurrence of irregular expenditure. So despite looking at the policy to prevent irregular expenditure, the AG notes that 100% of the irregular expenditure incurred in the current financial year was a result of contravention of supply chain management legislation, which amounted to $6.1 million. So in 2016-17, they reviewed supply chain management policy. 2017-18, they revised the policy, and then they implemented it. And the idea was to prevent irregular expenditure. But despite that, despite the policy being in place, they still incurred 6.1 million rand irregular expenditure. So there's a disjuncture between what they say they're doing versus what actually happens. In terms of the core programs, I think it's important to establish, remember they changed that target, that was the erratum around the APP, because Cabinet had said, don't do a policy, do a framework. What's the difference between the two? Because to provide free sanitary towels, you still need something that has to be costed. In other words, if we would decide to roll out free pads tomorrow throughout the country, what's going to guide the country? It still has to be a policy position. So what's the difference between a policy and a framework?
It's all
And then just to reiterate what Kistel was saying, the future plans that she listed, it occurred in the annual report. Do they intend doing this between now and the elections? Because that's a very short period.
Are you going to do some more revisions?
Yeah. Okay, as you move down to NDP again, with NDP moving over to page 10 and outcome 14, if you look at what those targets are, so in terms of campaigns, you can say yes, there are lots of campaigns, but what was the outcome? And how are we moving further in terms of gender equality in the country? The CGE can give us a better assessment of where we act in terms of gender equality. The department at present can't tell members in a comprehensive manner, this is where we think the country is at in terms of promoting gender mainstreaming and gender equality. Just to reiterate again, the National Gender Policy Framework, this is very important. This is the overarching guidance for the entire country. They only want to review this as part of their future plans. It was reviewed, if members remember, in the time of the Department of Women, Children, and Persons with Disabilities, and then our department was started. And the former minister wasn't very keen on looking at following up on that, because we kept asking and she kept circumventing that. But why is that important? It's like the NDP that guides the entire country. We don't have legislation that would help departments know what they need to do. So therefore we need a policy, but a policy that's up to date, that takes into consideration not just domestic issues, but international treaty compliance matters as well. If we move to page 11, the draft frameworks. So for, again, this is your achievement. So for your 17-18, you had three key draft reports: gender responsive planning, financial inclusion, and the framework on sanitary dignity. Now, all three of these are technically just academic papers. I've had a look at them, and what I'll do next week is just provide members a bit of a summary as to what that contains. But even the gender responsive planning budgeting framework, it's not actually what government should be doing. It's a proposal of what needs to be done in order for government to look at gender responsive planning budgeting. So they spend an entire year doing a draft framework. Crystal gets requests from members for international papers, and she has to have a turnaround of 3 to 5 days. Crystal gets requests from members for papers for an international meeting or local meeting, and a turnaround time is 3 to 5 days, and that's still lenient. Here they spent an entire year coming up with a draft paper.
Which we haven't seen either.
Okay, so in summary, the department's achievement spent 82 million.
Am I right?
No.
The department? 99% of its budget.
Yeah.
Which is 59% of the target. If we move to page 12. So now I'm literally just looking at what's your value add, because we're focusing on achievements. Program 1, you spent 82 million. Program 2, page 12. Yeah, so there's three columns. Program 1, 82 million. Program 2, the 94, less what was transferred to the CGE. And program 3, 27. So under the amounts, I looked at, well, what did they achieve for each of those programs? Program 1 is mostly compliance matters. They've got to review the ATP, they've got to submit that, they've got to give quarter reports, keep their spending under 2%, keep their vacancy rate down. But if you look at what was outsourced in terms of consultants, when I look at that HR table that Crystal spoke to, they spent money on a business analysis services, facilitation for the operational plan, and translators and transcripts for disciplinary inquiry. If you look at Program 2, Program 2 produces draft frameworks. One was financial inclusion, the gender responsive budgeting, and the sanitary dignity. In terms of consultants, they use that for the development of a situational analysis on sanitary dignity products and a situational analysis on the sanitary dignity products for the Eastern Cape, KZN, and Mpumalanga. So those are all separate consultants.
So if we, yeah. So if we go to that page,
for all of the targets that were achieved, were done by the
Okay. Okay. So let's go to page 98 in your annual report. So on page 98, as Crystal spoke to before, it gives you the project title, the value in the last column. So when we look at Faculty Dignity, they had in total. So for they spent money in Mpumalanga to do a situational analysis, KZN, Eastern Cape, and then an overall situational analysis. That came in total to 1.126 million. If you add up all that amount. So for Sanity Dignity, besides having an official within the program too to work on that, they also outsourced and got a consultant to do a situational analysis in three of the provinces. So that all that sanitary money comes to 1.126 million.
For situational analysis.
For situational analysis.
What is this?
So if you look 1. At 1.126 million.
And they spent 80,000 rand on the actual sanitary tile.
So, but I think this, again, when members look and question the department around consultants, which is something the AG had discussed with Che in a one-on-one meeting. If you look at those small amounts, the small amount doesn't have to go to tender, right? Because it's under 500,000. But when you add it all up, it's 1.126 million. So I think it's Ms. Grace had asked in a previous meeting around the dialogues, did it go to one consultant or several? Which means, if you look at what the AG was saying about there wasn't a competitive bid, does it mean then... So in other words, I'm in KZN and I ask you, please do a situational analysis and I'll pay you 375,000. I don't need to send that to tender. But if I ask you again in Mpumalanga to do that, I'm the same person, I'm just doing it in a different province. So if you add up all the monies, is it going to one person or is it going to several people?
Corruption.
So that's...
Corruption.
Yeah. Corruption.
Yeah.
The maladministration.
So similarly, when you look at the dialogues now, so keep open your page 98. On my page P3, under program 3, you can see they've got the achievements is this baseline report on DTI, an M&E framework that was developed, and remember, I just spoke to that earlier on, that was by a consultant. They had 3 speeches, 7 media statements, 13 campaigns, 4 national dialogues, 4 reports, and a midterm evaluation report on the 9-point plan. On my document, on page 12. So just P3, if you look at just the achievements, what they say this program did. But when you look at, well, what was outsourced, in terms of what was outsourced, you go back to page 86. So in terms of the baseline report by DTI, they spent 1.2 million on that for consultants. So on my page 12, the first achievement they said was that they were going to develop a baseline report on DTI incentive scheme, right? But if you look on page 86 in the annual report, we spent 1.2 million on consultants to do that. Yeah. The similarly, we spent money. Similarly, when we look at that M&E framework, which I spoke to, that was developed, we spent money on consultation for the M&E framework. We also spent money on developing a draft concept paper for Women's Day celebrations and
Now, here's the thing around the dialogues. We spent money and facilitation for Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, and the Northwest. When we look on page 86 in your annual report, it's about in the middle of the table. It says the facilitation, Mpumalanga, dialogue, but it doesn't tell you the total number of consultants, and it doesn't tell you the estimated amount of days. When you add all of that up together, how much we spent on facilitation for three provinces, it was 1.472 million. So, and here's the thing about the whether it was sent out to tender or not. If you look at one province, Mpumalanga, it's just under 500,000. Miss Grace, in your quarterly report briefing, you had asked, but wait a minute, we're spending just under $500 million on 3 days with a consultant. Is it the same in one province as the other? What the AG found was it was actually the same consultant. So technically, it should have got out to tender. Because when you add up all of this, it's 1.4 million. But what they did was they asked in this province, okay, I need you to come in, and they send in a proposal, but the quote can be just under 500,000. Because it comes in just under 500,000, technically it doesn't have to go out to tender. Well, that's the information we... So can you, I think what I've tried to show members here in terms of your achievements, we've listed all of these achievements. A significant part of those achievements is actually done by consultants.
And before you continue,
the even this dialogue, though it has not fallen within your outsourced services, but remember, they've utilized consultants to consolidate even the reports of all the dialogues actually which were conducted. So yes, in the dialogues. So technically, the dialogues falls within the consultant, because they've used the consultant to do that. Definitely they have outsourced.
So just in summary then, on page 12 of my document, what I'm asking is, we've got all these achievements, we've spent so much money on consultants, but what did our officials do? What did they contribute to each of the achievements of these targets? I think that has to be asked, because they did get a promotion of salary band increase. So on what was that based?
Okay.
Let's go back to those dialogues. Remember, in our previous quarter, the money, the budget for paying the consultant in Northwest was distributed. So what was the final amount paid to the consultant in Northwest?
Says here
$497.
Yeah. So what we've asked the department, especially in terms of the dialogues, is to actually say, per province, what is it that you spent, by who? And remember, there was a discrepancy between the quarterly reports and what was done when. There's a section on dialogues that I'm going to come to, because there's discrepancies in the annual report around dialogues as well, which I'll bring to members' attention. So, just in terms of page 13 and the 9-point plan, so they were supposed to, they said they would be developing one midterm evaluation report on the 9-point plan. So that was an achievement. But how did they develop this when Crystal mentioned earlier that the target they didn't achieve was the three...
Yeah, they only
So the
So they had a one midterm evaluation report, but the target above that was that they were supposed to produce 4 monitoring reports, and they couldn't do that. So how do you prepare a midterm evaluation when you couldn't do the monitoring reports? So that doesn't make sense, and we haven't received this midterm evaluation report. Again, just to end on page 13, they say they provided lots of analysis and input into government policies. So they would give input to policies from Statistics of Africa, the Law Reform Commission, SMMEs, the Liquor Amendment Bill, higher education, housing and disability. But all of that is very confusing because it's kind of all over the place. So they reflect in the annual report that this is where the department gave input. But it's not actually, it doesn't occur under program 3 or 2. It's just noted as achievements, which is problematic. So even within the annual report reporting, one section will say this is what the department was able to do and has done, but then when you actually look at the target, it's not reflected there. So who did the work and where is it being covered? And even around the, they said they were going to look at top 100 JSE listed companies. Yeah, the research was done by in the private sector around that. There's been a substantive report by a private company that looked at women on the JSE, and it's very detailed and very thorough. So again, it's like, so why did this? Okay, as we move over, we're nearly ending page 14. So the department noted on page 29 in the annual report that it conducted via the M&E unit gender analysis of annual reports between 2015 and 17 of the IDC, NEF and PID to measure economic empowerment of women in the implementation of its mandate, and that reports were produced in this regard. But again, we know they don't have an M&E framework, they don't have the capacity, and they don't have the skills. So how did they analyze these annual reports? And where are these reports to show us what the outcome of that analysis was? In terms of 4.4 international engagement, so they, again, it's listed as an achievement. They said, so besides CSW, the three other engagements was actually meetings in which the minister was invited. So it's not to say that they were delivering a country report. It was an invitation for a technical meeting, was an invitation for an AU meeting or BRICS. Treaty compliance. There's very little in the annual report around treaty compliance. We were told that the fifth periodic report around CEDAW was supposed to be submitted. I've checked on the website for the CEDAW committee. It's not there. But I think the important thing is the committee for CEDAW was very strong with government of Africa. Told them in terms of concluding observations and list of issues, what is it that they expect, what is it that they want, and what they need to report back on. So surely that should have been the department's key thing in terms of monitoring and evaluation, because the CEDAW committee provided in detail everything from traditional courts to gender-based violence to access to justice to Muslim marriages. They were very clear as to what should be focused on. Campaigns and outreach initiatives. Again, so besides the gender-based violence focus and the national dialogues, I don't understand how they decide whether they're going to do cancer awareness, moral regeneration, or Nelson Mandela. It just feels like wherever they got an invite to do an event or a campaign, they went and they did. Mm-hmm. There's no strategy to say within this year, this is our focus. The national dialogues. So the reporting of the national dialogues is not coherent. And why do I say this? So in the overview of the departmental performance, the table reflects social mapping profiles for national dialogues were conducted in the Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, and the Northwest. So that could, so that's on page 28. But on page 30, they're saying violence against women and children dialogues were conducted in the Western Cape, Northwest, and Northern Cape. So how come you're doing social mapping in some provinces but not in others, and you have dialogues in what you call violence against women and children in three? So there's a disjuncture. So it's unclear why the social mapping was not done for the Western Cape if dialogues were subsequently held there. And then on page 33, under the highlights of significant achievements, they say the national dialogues were held and a report was developed on Mpumalanga, the Mpopo, Eastern Cape, and Northern and Northwest. And then under program 3, again in the annual report, it says the dialogues were held in the Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, and Northwest. It was reported under the performance indicator for the 365 days campaign. But the Western Cape dialogue was reflected as one of the 12 public participation outreach initiatives on page 57. So for me, it's very confusing. A social mapping was done for certain provinces. Violence against women and children dialogues were held in certain provinces. Reports were held for dialogues in other provinces. I think it would be important for members to establish from the department during 1718, where did you hold dialogues? Which provinces? Where did you use consultants for which provinces? What were the consultants used? Where did you develop reports for which provinces? And what was the intended outcome? Because based just on one annual report, I can't make head or foot of whether you did a social mapping, whether you did the dialogue, or whether you did the report. So again, just on page 16, I think the AG has been very clear to members and the Audit and Risk Committee as to what is required. And some of these questions need to be posed to the department for more insight and clarity. Members, thank you very much. Crystal and I have literally gone through this annual report back to front. We've not just taken into consideration the annual report, but also looked at what they delivered in the last 4 years, plus our quarterly reports. So by far, this is really a comprehensive look at not just what they didn't achieve, but what they did achieve and what was your value for money. Coming on to the recommendation as to whether to cut the budget or not, or to withhold, I think my advice to the committee would be, in our opinion, or in my opinion, I can say, there's definitely a need to look at gender equality in the country. It's like questioning whether we need the CGE or not. We do. So the CGE is a Chapter 9 institution, but within government, we do need to have a strong focus around monitoring and evaluation and assessment. Because the CGE is not a service delivery agent for that, it's a Chapter 9 institution. So something is definitely needed in government to be able to do this. However, in terms of what we give their money for and what they're delivering on, that needs to be looked at. So I think the recommendation and discussion for members should be in terms of stronger recommendations, in terms of being more harsh with the department. Yes. What is it that, because you want them to deliver, because we almost would be fighting our face by cutting off our nose by saying, take away their money, because it's not to the benefit of women in the country. What we do want is delivery. Mm-hmm. But how do we ensure that delivery, because cutting the budget won't help, but how do you do that differently? And is it about, short of being punitive, saying, well, the funds will be released on condition that ABC is done. And once we know that ABC is done, you'll get your next round out. Because at the moment, when you vote on your budget, you vote as a collective. You vote on the entire budget. So all the money is given to them, and then they can decide how and when they want to spend it. Whereas if you think around a conditional grant, a conditional grant says, I'll give you the money on condition that only A, B, C, D. And somehow we need to think of, well, what is it that we want to get out of this department? Because to take away their money, it's not going to help, we're not going to get, it's not going to benefit any of your constituencies. We're not going to improve the lives of women. We want to improve the lives of women. But how can we do that? Thank you.
I hear, and like I said, it's going to have to be a sanction that involves rands and cents. I don't think there's anybody in this room that will disagree that gender equality is an essential focus point, and it can only be monitored and evaluated by government. No private entity is, you know, really going to care about that. So it is a government function, and we do need it. But when you have a department that lacks the skill and capacity in its entirety, we cannot give 1 cent to that department. So there will have to be some kind of, I don't know how far we can dictate to the minister and the department in terms of what their organogram should be, what the salaries should be. I mean, of course, taking into consideration, you know, the norms and grading, absolutely. But how many staff members in what positions and what grades and what organogram to look at the staffing issue and say, look, keep 50 employees and make sure that you focus on skills development to take them from here to there, and that at least 10 employees have upskilled into that. Because you don't want to just fire people either. We need to focus on upskilling people. And then find a way to say, right, by the end of this year, you should have evaluated each government department to find out how far, number one, they've progressed in terms of gender equality. So, for example, in 1994, it was a 70-30 split, and we're in 2019 now, and we have a 60-40 split. That's number one. And then number two, how many departments actually have gender-responsive budgeting? Just that will give us a better perspective of government on its own. And that is doable. I mean, the two of you could probably do that on your own in 3 days. But that's one thing that the department could achieve, and maybe development a framework or strategy to improve that. And if that alone is a target. But my point is, this department in its current form, with its current leadership, with the current skills and capacity difference, it's not going to even be able to think about thinking. And that's the point. I hear you. We don't want to cut off our noses to spite our faces. But how can we justify giving 1 cent to a department that is completely inept? What is the bridge between an existing department that exists now? What parliamentary options do we have available? What would the wording be to take it from a department as it exists now, and by the next budget vote, we say that we are going to approve a conditional grant and a department that must meet the following objectives? What is the process in between that? And when we vote on the budget, do we all vote asifuni? Or would by that vote, when that vote comes to us in November, would we have already said to Treasury, look, this is no longer going to be a departmental full allocation, but in terms of our VRRR, we now want this department to receive a conditional grant. I mean, those are the technicalities. We need the work done, but we cannot justify how do we move from what is to where we want it to be.
That's what I need to understand. How do we get from here to there?
Yeah, Chairperson, I agree with everything that the Honourable Terry Stand has said. I think just the problem here is fundamentally where we started in 2014, and that's when this department went from being a full department to this department in the presidency. Because if you look now at the structure of this department, then it's quite clear that, firstly, I think, for example, if we had to do an oversight visit and we had to monitor, for example, staff members for a week, I guess we would find that they don't do anything.
Yeah.
Because the problem now here is you've got an employment agency that pays people very well, A. B, that all receive notch increases, and we don't know for what, yet targets are not met, but the budget is spent. Then you've got two issues now with this department. Firstly, it's only an employment agency, people that don't have the skills to do the job. Then, secondly, what I'm reading into, what I'm seeing in terms of these contracts that have gone out to people under 500,000 is that this is not only an employment agency, but possibly also a department that's been infiltrated by corruption. Because you don't issue three tenders and also, for example, what would you need a needs analysis for in terms of your or a development of a situational analysis for the sanitary decree project? You could have found the Department of Education. As the Department of Women in the Presidency, surely you walk to Angie Motshekga and you say to her, please tell me which schools in KZN are mostly affected. You know, I went to, no. You don't have to wait 500,000 rand on trying to find out which schools were you target first for sanitary pads. You don't have the money. And secondly, then again, my question is, why are they using, you know, if you employed me, and I am I'm doing this job, I'm in the Department of Women and Presidency, and my political principal comes to me and says to me, Lise, we now need to make this sanitary decree project work. Eh? You need to come up with which schools are we first targeting. Because there is no, firstly, no policy or no framework in place. So what you do is you start by speaking to the Minister of Higher Education. You set up a meeting of basic education. You set up a meeting with the Department of Education, and you come up with a joint plan of action. You don't need consultants for all of these things. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, come budget day, it will be our individual caucuses who will decide on how we vote, whether we vote. I feel for my colleagues and comrades from the African National Congress, because I know your heart is in the right place, and you will obviously. But I mean, it's politics. You face an uphill battle, and to convince your chief whip or your political superiors that you can't support this budget. But of course, the fact of the matter, what I'm trying to say is, this department, since its inception, has had no clue of what it should be doing. And the thing is, what we said to them right from the start was, get the basics right. Get the very basics right. So, in order to get the basics right, for example, as Terry had said, the first thing one would have done was, since it's in section one, to draw up a document and start with each minister and say to them, firstly, let's look at your budget. Is your budget women-friendly? Are you meeting minimum requirements in terms of the employment of women? Are you creating opportunities for women? That is what this department was supposed to do. We are now at the end of this term of us. We're going to an election in a couple of months' time. It is clear that from the start, A, they didn't know what they were supposed to do. B, they had the wrong people in the wrong positions, earning very high salaries. And these people, unfortunately, became untouchable. Because, you see, under Minister Shabango, she also protected people. I mean, remember how this committee has been treated by ministers and officials over how many years. So I am not going to walk away from this saying that we as a committee never did our job. We said from the beginning, you've got a little bit of money, please focus on one or two issues, and one or two issues would have been to hold to account the departments that fail women. Now, at the end of this five-year term, they have not even done that because they don't have people in M&E. They don't have a framework. They don't have people who understand it. And they spend money on consultants, which now we can also say is probably infiltrated by corruption, this whole system here. So, you know, it's a dire state of affairs. And I think somehow, you know, I think we did our work. We might not have succeeded, but I think we tried our best. And I think it's very clear that what we need to tell the next minister when she comes here on Tuesday is not very difficult, because they failed us, they have failed themselves, they are a dismal failure, and it's the women who bear the brunt. And they've wasted our money. And you know what? I think I'm going to volunteer myself when I've got a week off, and I will go to that department and I will follow people. And I'll make notes of what they're doing, because quite frankly, for this salary that they're earning, R1 million, an ordinary member of parliament also earns R1 million, I can go and see what they're doing, and probably I'll find that for the whole day they're watching soapies or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised. Because if you can't phone the Department of Education and come up with a mini strategy on which schools to focus on, but you have to spend, let's have a look at this, you've got to spend how much is this altogether, all these situational analysis, you've got 500,000 here, okay, so it's almost maybe over R1 million. You cannot come up with a draft.
You can't find Angie Macheka.
So for me, you see, and also what do people do in cabinet? I mean, for example, as a minister of women's presidency, don't you press your button and say, listen, country is failing women, let's all meet and let's see what we can do. Because I want to know, what are you doing, Minister of Labour? And then you set up meetings, you bring in the relevant staff. You see, those are practical interventions. This thing of outsourcing everything to consultants and then you list this as an achievement. Then again, I'm asking, value for money for the taxpayer. What did the staff members do? Especially the ones that are so arrogant that come every time and they fill the seats and the back seats. There are many of them normally looking at us, wanting to tell us that we are wrong. See, I'm not a person that really likes to tell people that they failed, but really in this instance, it's now more clear than ever before that A, they didn't have a strategic direction, they didn't know what to do. It cannot be, it's unthinkable that after 5 years, they still don't know how to monitor and evaluate, which is their core function. Now they want to play around with sanitary pads, which is not their core function. Their core function is to go to the Department of Education and Social Development and Health and say, where's the money for sanitary pads? Right? And then the best thing is for the Auditor General to tell us, they don't even know if the sanitary pads reached the intended recipient. What are they doing? So, I'll go and volunteer myself for oversight there for a week.
No.
No, okay, thanks,
you
Chair.
We will all go together. Let me
scratch the back of your mind. Do you remember when we were told they're going to have skills audit?
Yeah.
And that was Schreiner.
Yeah.
Okay. May I please ask the two ladies, did you ever get a report around that issue?
No. It was a draft one,
I'm angry. Be careful.
Here we go.
Then it means. But there's no report.
No, there's a report.
Oh. By whom?
It was done by a consultant, but the Department of Women. Consultant. What
is that? Under whose leadership?
Now, we must also remind ourselves that we got that in August 2015, but we've been asking them since 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we kept up every meeting we were asking for that to be recorded.
Honourable Member, we've been too soft. And what's the final word? The problem is, if we say shut down, what about the people? The presidents have taken the podium and made so many promises. Then people were given and then we haven't done our work. Unfortunately, all of us are in the mud right now, irrespective of all the time we've been begging these people to be on the right track. So, Grace, as a young lady, what do you think is the best?
No, I think I'm covered by the two young ladies.
No, I'm talking to you.
No, I'm fine.
You must lead us, my sister.
No, my God.
The African National Congress here.
No,
my
God.
It's not the organization. We are women. But Chair, before you speak, Kashifa, can't we meet the National Treasurer? Because I can't even understand why are they, you know, also dispersing money. What is it that is convincing them?
And they did an investigation into Treasury.
Can they see these people are using consultants more than, you know, the stuff that they're having?
And is SCOPA an option?
Yeah, but National Treasury would be the first one. Or maybe appropriation. Yeah, because we have been talking about appropriation for quite some time. I think that's a better option.
No, thanks, Chair. No, I'm fully covered by honourable members. No, we are in a dilemma with this department for so long, but we have done our work as this committee. We have asked the difficult question from them. The pity that as members of parliament, we don't have access to the president, you know, to tell the president exactly what we are feeling. It's a problem. Yeah, that's a problem. Because we have even tried to tell the chief whip that there is a problem in this department. You know, we have several times reporting this matter. But the problem is that sometimes it feels as if you talk about the work of the department, or you work or you tell the chief whip about the so-and-so minister had not done his or her work, it seems as if you are trying to talk with somebody, you know, then you are finishing his or her work, you know. That is where the problem is. But we have done our part. I'm just referring to what the Honourable Fanermeva is saying, that is easy what we have done. We have done so lot, so many things. We have done many reports. Every week we report as a study group, because we have to meet, we always meeting every week to discuss these issues with the department. But we report these matters. We're even having the meetings. And even now we are having a planned meeting with the chief whip to discuss the issue of amalgamation of the Chapter 9 institutions. So Therefore, we have done a lot. I'm also referring to what other members have said. As this portfolio committee, we have done many things to make sure that this department, we put this department on what it's supposed to do. We even said that just mention or identify two things that you have to do. If you are able to target to meet all these targets, just identify two things that you are supposed to do, so that the women of South Africa will say, no, this department, after these 5 years, this is what we have done, you have done for them. Mm-hmm. So for us, I don't think we can say we haven't done anything. We have done a lot. We have to commend ourselves that we have done a lot with this department. We have asked questions even to the deputy president. We have asked those questions. We have asking the question to the ministers, even as oral questions to the minister. It's a pity that some of the questions, sometimes we find that the ignorance is happening there. But we will say that no, just because she's a minister, sometimes as politicians we are unable to say, no, this one must be dismissed or this one must be dismissed. You know, there's a problem with us. So, but for me, I'm saying that before I leave, no, we can't say no, we haven't done anything. We have done a lot. And even on the RRR report to Parliament, if the Parliament is able to look at all these reports, we'll be able to say, no, let us invite the minister. Let us ask this particular minister what this department is doing, so that they can be able to report. And now we are told that there must be legacy reports that must be done by all portfolio committees.
I agree.
And for us, what are we going to say? This is the legacy from this department, that we can say we are very proud of this department because we have done this and this and that. There's nothing that we can say this is what we are supposed to do. Anyway, honorable members, let me leave to the next meeting. We'll see you on Tuesday.
I think in terms of Wednesday, I just want to make maybe a practical solution. I think what we sometimes do is, you see, I think for Wednesday we must take like a sort of a approach which SCOPA does, and that is that, and I think we'll have to ask our researchers and content advisors to assist us with this, because I think each member must have like a focus area of questions, because you see what happens is there's so much that eventually all of us sort of focus on one area and then we don't get through all of it. So I think if each member can get like maybe a list of questions, and then you still add your own questions which you want to add, because of course we're going to say our own things, but I think sometimes we don't do justice to all the questions they prepare for us because we miss some of them. So I was thinking maybe if we can have like a tag team approach where each of us have got like a few set questions that we might be able to get in, so we cover all the bases, and then you can still add your own questions. Because that way, that is how SCOPA operates, and they unleash one member to ask a lot of questions and then answer, and then, because also what happens is if we ask them a lot of questions from different members, then they get away with not answering all of them. So we must do it like a grilling. So we go with, one person goes with a couple of questions and we get the responses. No? And you note what you want to do for your follow-up. And then it's the next one and the next one. You don't do three in a row. One member can have a set of questions and you add your own and you go and we get answers and we go and we get answers. So it's more of a... Okay, so it's more of a grilling, like the SCOPA type of grilling. That would be my first suggestion for Wednesday. My second suggestion would be that in terms of our legacy report, I think we need to, obviously, once we've prepared that, I think it's going to, it's really going to do the next parliament a disservice if we prepare a legacy report that's got false information in it. So I think as part of the legacy report, we better just be honest and say that unfortunately there's nothing that we can report as a legacy, because the thing is, it's not going to help the next parliament if we tell them fairy tale stories and then they find whoever will serve on this next portfolio committee, and in fact we lie to them, because also I don't want to be part. Look, I would rather say that this committee, and you know, I don't think this committee failed. Now, I must say, I think we've tried all our best. You know, at the end of the day, none of us are ministers, none of us are you know. So I would say, as a committee, firstly, we put political differences aside, which in my other portfolio committees you don't often see. I would say I'm proud that as a committee we were able to put our political differences aside and work for one common goal. And I think it's got a lot to do with your leadership as well, Chairperson. But I think in finalising that legacy report, it would be better to say that, you know, despite our efforts, we were not able to guide this department to get the basics right. And I think that, you know, it's better to be honest than to put some flowery stories in the legacy report that, you know, would never be true anyway. So I know it might be painful if we have to submit a legacy report that's got nothing in it, but I would rather do that than leave something that's not truthful.
Well, thank you very much. In addition to what Linda is saying, I think we've got programs in the department of focus areas. Program one, administration, it's big. There are too many questions there. You can just give them to two members. And then program two, small. Program three also. And then others, general overview. And finance. Oh, finance is part of, yeah, and finance, yeah, separately. And general overview. The chair can just do general overview of the...
Chair, I think that if we are going to do the interrogation of this Department Justice, we need to have a full day session with them. If they are going to be here on Monday, they must be here from 9:30, from Wednesday at 9:30 until 6 o'clock. And we must not let them walk out that door before they, even if they have to phone someone in the office to fax a document. We must not let them out that door, because how many times, Chair, and you know this, have we written to them, told them in meetings to send us this, to reply to that, and they don't only ignore us, they completely disregard us and undermine us and treat us like we are nothing. You know, like my son, he's 3 now. And he doesn't want to listen to me. So I'll say, Leleto, yeka, or something. And he will throw something on the floor and run away. That is the Department of Women. So can I ask that on Wednesday we have a full day meeting, we agree that we will not let them out that door before they have answered every single question. I agree with Liesl that we play tag team and that every member has questions that are grouped around a particular issue. I currently have about 57 questions I have 57 questions that perhaps I can send to you. It will only take me 3 hours, my mum, which I can send to you, and then you can mold whatever. I don't care who asks the questions, but we have to ask. And then in terms of our legacy report will be that that we held this department to account, that it wasn't within our power to take executive action, but that we recommend, or that this is what we decided to do with the department, or this is what we propose the next portfolio committee does with the department.
I think the
Chair, I was just talking to Crystal now. In terms of your powers as within the National Assembly and the Portfolio Committee, if you look at the accounting officer and the executive authority, within the department, she's the accounting officer. So in other words, all the programs, all the finance, the buck stops with her or him. In this case, it's her. And above that is the minister. And that's a political appointee. So in terms of your oversight and how you conduct oversight in terms of the department vis-a-vis the minister versus the DG, I think members should, in your preparation for Wednesday, think about in terms of sanctioning. Because technically, how do you sanction the minister when it's the prerogative of the president to appoint, recall a minister? But in terms of executive authority and your budget votes, I think maybe you should be thinking around sanctioning and things around the DG. So in other words,
And the DDG.
So that's senior, and so that's senior.
All of them.
Yeah. So, because all of them are accountable to the accounting officer. So, to think about, well, if you want to hold this DG to account, how are you going to do that? Because that's about the deliverables. In other words, she must get her workforce to do what she needs to in order for her to achieve what she needs to. Like with the CGE, when we did the turnaround strategy, we asked for monthly reports. You know, but see, we asked and it wasn't delivered. So again, it comes back to your sanctioning. So if the committee is going to be stronger, and you, what are you wanting from your DG that's different? So if you think about this, the challenges SASA's had and all of that, what did that committee do differently in order to be able to get the requisite information to change things? Because they were struggling for a long time and then they were shipped. So again, for our department, what do you want to do when it comes to the DG in terms of the accounting officer and holding that? Because you can't tell we want the minister to be recalled. It could be a political statement, but it's not the prerogative of you as a member of parliament. It's the president's prerogative to do that. But in terms of your budget vote and accounting officer, I think the thinking should be around the sanctioning around that. What do you want to do differently? What do you want to hold this DG to account? So if you see that something's not happening, what are going to be the implications for the DG?
The point I'm trying to make is that she's been given, or he's been given, I know it's a she, but I want to talk in terms of position, not person. The person in this position has been given enough rope to hang herself and the entire department. It's not like we'll be taking action because this is a first offence. This person is a serial offender, a serial, the accounting officer, the DG of the department, is a serial offender, because this is not the first annual report that there's been issues. You can go, the last 4 years, there have been issues. I remember that meeting, but what I'm trying to say is that even the present one, it's not the first time that under this person's leadership that this department has been found wanting. So I think it's unreasonable to say, listen, we are now putting you on terms. Now, if you do this one more time, you are going to get into trouble. because this is where it, with, I keep using the analogy of a child. But if you every time tell a child, next time you do this, next time you do this, next time you do this, that child is going to push you and push you and push you. God, why? If you act first time and you say, no, now go and sit on your naughty mat, then it's sorted. I don't hit my children, so my baba. But you, do you know what I mean? You take that disciplinary action there and then. A person...
Due is respect.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's choose our words properly.
What
statements we're uttering, because at some stage we're going to be charged. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, all I'm trying to say is that we need to take meaningful, harsh action against the department and whoever we agree is responsible, therefore, and that we should not be afraid. Politics or no politics, we were represented to serve our people, to represent our women, and politics cannot interfere ever with our mandate. Our responsibility is to the people first. Woman first, then party. We need to deal with this department decisively and make it an example so that people in future will say, hey, do you remember what the Department of Women, what the Portfolio Committee of Women did? That is what we must do. Remember, in 2018, the Portfolio Committee did that. And we will be the leaders. Let us do our job. Let us bite with the teeth we've been given. Diatela mama. Sihlalo wami. Kobo wami.
But all our discussions right now is choose the word we use.
What was I saying? Did
look
I swear?
Look back.
No. I was asking Grace what did I say, so she was telling me the naughty things I was saying. So I was like, oh, okay.
The thieves, the serial killer.
Liars, thieves. I said serial offender, not serial killer.
No, I'm taking exception to that.
Okay.
So we're not meeting on Tuesday. Why not you say?
Great sexual
man. So now I'm going to have to ask you.
Because now Mama Kappa, because I will not.
Oh yeah.
Do you want to do it?
No, because remember some of the lessons on Wednesday.
I'll ask it.
Remove
Any political things that we said, not clear public consumption.
I've never asked for your answer. Yes, but
I can't hear.
Yes, what are you saying? You're listening. Right?
Don't make them off.
No, I'm listening.
No, okay. Forget about it.
Continue with your question.
On record, Chair, I'm saying the PNG is just in front of me and they've been recording each and everything. That's their responsibility. So this meeting was open to the public, it's an official meeting. So if you find anything that has been discussed here being outside for public consumption, don't blame me. Don't kill anybody.